Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for calling to welcome to Sherry. I'm chatting to Sherry. This is my very special episode with Hudson Like. She is the best actress who was ever in Xena, other than Lucy and Renee. She played Callisto, who was a warrior who was after Xena. But now she is a spiritual lady who does yoga, and she has a new CD that's coming out. Welcome, Hudson.
Thank you, Sherry.
Hudson, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
A little bit about myself. I was born in Ohio, grew up in Rochester, New York, started acting a little bit in high school, went to acting school in New York City instead of college after I was a terrible model, and moved out to L.A. to try to get work, and I did. And that was my acting career. I stopped acting probably last year. And my focus has been yoga retreats and CDs. And I still do conventions for the show that I'm most known for, Xena Warrior Princess. So I get lucky enough to travel to Europe doing conventions now. And they still have them in L.A. and other places as well. And it's good. It's nice.
And when you go to the Xena conventions, do you still do the yoga sessions with your guests at the convention?
I do. We at the conventions now, we usually offer a yoga class, and people can check it out. It's anybody can do it. You don't have to be like an athlete, and it's just for health and calming your mind, and it feels incredible. And we're doing it this year in France again, and we're going to do a dance, and we're doing it in LA this year for the Xena convention as well.
What kind of a dance?
The dance that I've studied for a really long time is called Gabriel Roth's Five Rhythms, and they have a bunch of them here in LA. So it's five rhythms. And it's not dance as you normally would know dance. It's not like you have cigarettes and you get drunk and you're hitting on people in the dark. Although that has its place, I'm sure, as well. But it's more you move your body into however it feels good. So there's five rhythms. That never changes. So feminine, melodic, masculine, staccato, lyrical, chaos, and stillness. So it brings you, there's two waves in every dance. It's about an hour to 2 hours. And it brings you really, really high and then drops you. But the thing about this particular dance is you just get to be in your body. It's like sweating your prayers. You do whatever you want to do. You can lay on the floor. I had spent years laying on the floor, just crying or whatever came up. When we say dance, it's such a loose term. It's like really just being in your body and feeling whatever you want to feel. And you move, of course, but you don't have to. You can dance with other people. You can dance by yourself. It can be a wonderful doorway to connecting to yourself and to others because you don't talk while you do it. There's no talking. So it's communication through movement.
That's really interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Oh, my God, it's glorious. I've been doing it for over 10 years.
Wow.
Not teaching it, not leading it, but my teachers are really incredible teachers, and it's helped me grow a great deal as a person.
Is the movement sort of like Tai Chi?
It's not like Tai Chi, because Tai Chi, it could be like Tai Chi, but Tai Chi is, it is energetic, similar to Tai Chi, but Tai Chi is like yoga. It's a set of exercises and movements. This particular dance is feeling whatever you want to feel in your own body. It's like playing. It's like a bunch of grown-ups being able to play and feel their own bodies and react to the music how you want or not react at all. It's really, to me, about unwinding the conscious mind and being able to just explore what you feel, what your being feels, rather than trying to look good and get it right. I mean, when I first went to dance, I'm sure I looked ridiculous. Like, I looked like a freaking stripper trying to get attention, not knowing how to. Because, like, when you go to dance clubs, you see people dance. Not everyone, mind you, but you see people dance, and they're, like, you know, in their high heels and their cigarette in their hand. Although that's not actually legal anymore, but I'm dating myself. And they wiggle around and try to look really sexy. And maybe not everyone does that. Maybe that's just me. But when I first came to dance, I had that, and that's all I knew. And the intimacy of being really fully present in your body and not trying to portray a character to whatever you think society wants you to look like is amazingly freeing. It's really, it's like being a kid again. You get to explore and be whatever you are in that moment without fear of people judging you.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. That sounds really cool. Tell us a little bit about how you got your part as Callisto and Xena. I know how that sort of switches the subject, but I'm very curious about the, did you get a call from your agent, or did you even know what the show was about before?
I had no idea. Like, when you're an actress, which I am not currently, I don't consider myself an actress anymore, but you get many calls, hopefully, for auditions. And you don't know what they are. You just get, sometimes you'll get a script. Sometimes you'll just get what's called sides. And that just means the audition piece that you need to study. And then you go in and you read with the casting director. But most of the time, I may not know what I'm going in for. Now, back when Xena was first started, I wasn't on the computer at all. Now I am on the computer, and if I wanted to look up something, I could probably get as much information as I possibly could. But when I first came to L.A., we had to actually go drive to our agents and pick up our script, like, the night before the audition. Yeah, this is like the dark ages.
I remember.
In our person buggy. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And then you go on the audition, and you're in a room with a bunch of girls or women that look just like you, which is terrifying. And and you do the best you can, but you don't really know, and you have to let go of it because there's so much no, there's so many rejections that it's not, and you don't really think of it. I never thought of it as a rejection the first go around. I think it would get harder for me if you get really close to a part and they bring you back in three or four times and you start getting attached to the character and you really want the part. Then it's a big heartbreak when you don't get it. But if you just go in once, it's just your job. That's, you think of that as your job, and you don't think, I'm going to get this. That was my experience. You just do the best you can. You don't think, I'm not going to get this. You just let it go. You just go, do your work, and let it go, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Xena, auditioning for Xena, I knew nothing about Xena. I knew Alex Tidings did Hercules, and I was friends with her, and she was just so cool. She was so interesting that I was like, well, if she did, and she'd done the Red Shoes too, the Red Shoes Diary, which was so naughty in my mind. I was like, I'd never do that. And I was like, but she did this, and she did Hercules, which I had never seen either. So I was like, that could be cool. So I auditioned for it. I remember seeing a little bit of Hercules, and the women were scantily clad and seemed like morons. And that was not appealing to me whatsoever. So when I auditioned, I wore a skirt down to my ankles, full boots, and a top that showed no cleavage and was down to my wrists. And
you were trying to make a point.
I don't think I just, it's funny because, I mean, it's not like I haven't sexualized myself in my life. I probably have a great deal, but for some reason that particular, it seemed just a little snippet of Hercules. I was like, I'm not going to be the bimbo. I want to be the bimbo. I mean, if I choose to be a bimbo, that's totally different because there are some great parts that are bimbos that are really funny. But it just didn't hit me right that I wanted to be that. Plus the character reading Callisto, she clearly wasn't. She's pretty much a psycho. So when I auditioned, I walked in. It was, what they do is when they have a guest star, a lot of times all the producers will be in the room and they make the decision that day, or within the 2 days if they have like a session for 2 days or 3 days looking for an actress. They don't call you back in typically unless it's an ongoing character, or it's a really, really important character and they have enough money and time to do so. So all the producers were in the room. I walked in. I remember being, I think I've already told the story before, but I was already a little snarly because I was waiting out in the waiting room, and I was young and entitled, and they were really loud. The people that were in the office were really loud, so everybody trying to study, all the actresses trying to study, it was really hard to focus, and it was a very small, small space. So I remember just getting a bee in my butt and walking in with an attitude, just being really annoyed and not feeling respected, which is funny because it actually worked for my favor, but that's not how I want to live my life anymore at all. So I walked in, and usually what they do is the producers, you know, they typically have all the power because they're the ones that are going to hire you or not hire you, so you do your best to please them, which makes the most sense. And at the time, I didn't feel that way, so usually you say your name, and then you do, you know, you're of service to them. That's your job. But that particular day, I think I was just very unpleasant. And instead, I asked them all to say their names, and I shook each one of their hands, which was pretty ballsy and was very aggressive, to say the least. And I did the audition, and they asked me if I could kick and throw, and I did. And then that was it. And from one of the producers that I became friends with years and years later told me that they all thought I was completely insane and they just made fun of me the whole day. Like, they weren't even considering having me for the role. They were just like, what a nut job. Like, how ridiculous is that? And then finally, the head writer, RJ, said, you know what, guys? I think we have something here. Because she's really crazy.
They were talking about you all
day. And
this
character is really crazy. I think we should hire her. And apparently Rob Tappert then said, well, what if she eats the crew? And then RJ said, well, then we don't bring her back. So apparently that's how it all began.
Oh, my God, that's
so funny. See, girls, TMS can be your friend.
I love it. Once you got the part, how did you go about building the character?
That particular character?
Callisto.
It's so long ago, so it's a great question, but it's such a long time ago. I think typically when I used to get a part, there's just something that fits when you read it. That's why you get it. There's just something that it hits you perfectly. It's like a round peg into the round hole. It just fits. So it's not that I had to work really hard at Callisto ever, really. I remember being on the plane sometimes, like I hadn't read the script at all yet. So on the plane going to New Zealand, I would read the script and I'd laugh out loud just reading all the crazy shit she would do and figuring out how I was going to say it or what I was going to do. But basically, Callisto for me, and thank God she existed, because what a therapeutic part that was for me. The thing I loved about her was there was no coloring in the lines with her. I didn't have to please anybody. I mean, literally from the beginning, I didn't have to please anyone, even from the audition. I had no restraint. And the great thing of working with Rob Tappert was at the round table, if one of us would say, you know, I don't feel like my character would say that, he would be so open. He'd be like, well, what would you say? Well, what would she say then? And he would allow us to, you know, to correct our own characters, which was really great.
Yeah.
And, you know, same with the directors. The directors, because we always had different directors, too, and they knew we knew our characters probably better than they did. So we got to play with them. So Callisto was a, you know, there was never enough blood or carnage or screaming or having total meltdown fits. But she did come from a very young place in me, like a very angry young, and I think most villains do, even if they don't seem necessarily immature like Callisto did at times.
I found her to be like a little girl all the time. Like a little girl without the legs on a spider, but a little girl.
I think at times I think she had to have adult nature at times to get through what she did. I mean, to have people follow her and have an army in the beginning, but she did digress at times a great deal. But I think it was, in my mind anyways, it was usually when we're wounded as human beings at a certain age, and it's a really bad traumatic wound, we don't grow past that age a lot of times emotionally. So that would be my guess for Callisto. She just didn't get past her whole family dying and wanting to harm the person who did it. And not growing up fully. Just think of like anyone that becomes a victim. The people that react really harmfully and resentfully to other people believe that they're the victims. Mm-hmm. They believe that they have been so hurt, and they may have been, but without being able to absorb all of that, we can't move on, and then we attack others to try to make ourselves feel better. And look at our history. How well has that worked?
Yeah. You can look at the terrorists today and see it.
Yeah. But, sure. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's other people. The thing I loved about Callisto, too, is that aspect is definitely inside me. There's no shying away from, I have a shadow side, and every human being has a shadow side. And I mm-hmm. think growing up, having good guys, that's what was so great about Xena, because she had the shadow side, and she knew she had this shadow side, and we all knew she had this shadow side. But I think growing up, the good guys were always so good and so pure, you couldn't relate to them. And then if you have a shadow side, then you shame yourself because you don't want anyone to see that aspect of you. And that's not realistic, nor is it helpful, because then it comes out sideways in some other dark way.
So that's probably why some people haven't accepted that part of themselves, and that's why they become so violent.
I don't have the answer to all of it, but I would... Yeah, there's something about being a victim and feeling victimized and then feeling righteous in making the person who harmed you or the group or the country that harmed you pay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty human and it's pretty challenging. And if you're really honest with yourself, it's very hard not to retaliate.
Yeah, I understand that. But that's why you're supposed to have learned right and wrong from when you were a child, too. to work through it and try to not do that.
But I don't think we learn that as a child. I don't think we learn that if your needs don't get met, if someone takes a toy away from you and that you're really angry, that it's okay to feel that anger. It's not okay to hit the other kid with a toy, but it's okay to feel frustrated and feel the loss of not having that toy. It's okay. That's human. But when we say, that's bad, stop yelling, not that yelling is the best thing in the world, but, like, pull your shit together, two-year-old. Like, pull it together. Like, that's not realistic. Or seven,
no.
You know? Or even now, like, if we don't get what we want in life, it's okay to be upset about it. And usually the anger comes up because to deal with the loss of not getting what you want is really hard. That's hard to sit in the surrender of not getting what you want without getting angry. Getting angry blocks it. You can be righteous and then act out.
Well, it's hard when you make a mistake. I mean, like, I'm going to be very honest. I messed up our opening. I totally went off script and I was very nervous and I messed it up. I spent 5 minutes of this talk listening to you and kicking myself.
That's beautiful, though. That's human. That's awesome. So what? You know? Like,
I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did that. But, you know, I couldn't just start crying on the air, so I just continued doing my job.
Yeah. And we do the best we can. I mean, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody, yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
That's how we figure out what works and what doesn't. And it's
exactly.
There's no. It's the judgment I think that we hold against ourselves that's the cruelest sometimes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think most of us are our own harshest critics. I think that's just human.
Mm.
Well, I'm going to ask you about your spiritual quest and how that started. So we did a perfect segue.
Well done.
Thank you.
My spiritual quest. I just did a ceremony in Colorado this weekend, and it was a 2-day ceremony. And it's you're alone, and I won't get into the details of it, but you're alone for 2 days, and it's pretty intense. And I came out of it, and I talked to my teacher about it, and he's like, what did you learn? What did you get? There's all these questions and things you have to work on within those 2 days, and you're really in solitary confinement, and there's absolutely no sunlight, and you don't know if it's day or night, and it's intense. And I came out of it realizing I don't really know anything. And I'd written a great deal down. And I learned, I mean, I had a lot of things pop up while I was on the ceremony. But what I'm learning right now is I really don't have the answers. Like, this world and all the objects in it, everything I think I know, I don't really know. I don't really know what... the things I label things and the things I hold on to is so right is possibly not true, which is amazing. It's an amazing place to be, you know, in midlife to realize that, one, I don't have to have all the answers. I don't have to have them. And two, I don't have them. I don't have them. Because what's good for someone might not be good for someone else. There's just so many variables to so many things. And that's an interesting place to be and can be scary, too. But my spiritual quest started when I was younger. I had a pretty difficult upbringing and a really hard time in my teens and 20s. And I was in a lot of emotional pain. And I started going to yoga in my early 20s. And that's probably where it started, my spiritual quest. I always really admired people that had a sense of God, but the word God never worked for me. It just felt too white man in the sky, and that just, it didn't speak to me, and I couldn't understand it. I couldn't feel it. And it made me sad that I couldn't feel it, because I really wanted to feel something, but I just didn't. But when I started doing yoga, I started feeling, because that's my primary sense, is I feel things. So I started feeling something in the yoga class, something I couldn't describe, some kind of energy, something really amazing. And I would also feel after doing the class, I would feel peace, so physically doing the class. And I think from there, I just started getting curious about, I think God sort of grew out of that for me. And when I say God now, my understanding, which is so personal of God, is God is energetic. It's the energetic of everything. Everything you see and the things you don't see, it's the whole. And that being, if you would call it, I am a part of. Every cell of my being, all the blood in me, is also of that. And so is everyone and everything else. And I can't begin to perceive it because it's way past my limited mind. But in that, there's something about the humility connected to that there's a God and I'm certainly not it. There's something way bigger than me and that I can tap into that energy somehow, and that the more I give up my own ego and the way I think everything's got to go my way or my judgments, the more I'm willing to surrender those and let those go and, for lack of a better word, bow to my idea of my creator, the more peace and the more space and room I have to be in this world. It's really interesting. The more humble I become, and not false humility, but the more I'm willing to let go of my ideas and my righteousness, the more I'm experiencing something much more beautiful and much more playful, like a child. So that's my beginnings. Yeah. And from there, I explore everything. I mean, all religions interest me, all of them. I couldn't really understand Christianity so much growing up because that was the only thing that was available. But now I have I have such love for the idea of Jesus Christ and of all the Hindu masters that are very deeply connected to me as well, and they're all Indian. But it doesn't really, the religion doesn't even matter to me. Anyone that connects to God that I can hear through their words, usually through their quotes or the readings that I read through them, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, Native American, it doesn't, and the ones that have no names, it doesn't matter because it's basically all the same thing. It boils down to the same thing.
It's basically just, you know, energy and love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you don't act anymore. So is your yoga retreats basically your new passion in life?
Yes, I would have to say yes. I think any modality of being of service is my passion in life. It doesn't just have to be the yoga retreats. I've done counseling in my life, and even like if I visit Amici, who is one of my spiritual teachers, if I'm doing dishes while I'm there, they call it seva, selfless service, or I'm serving food. Like, to be of service in some way, I'm learning it's so selfish, in fact, to be of service, because when you're of service, when I'm of service, I feel like I belong. It's such a good feeling, such a better feeling than when I'm self-absorbed and worried just about myself. Which, let me know that still happens all the time.
Well, you're human, Hudson. I expect that.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that, you know, you would forget that stuff. I mean, everybody has that part of them. Even, I don't really think you can be human and not have it.
I don't know. I think there's lots of things that are possible that I just don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly not there yet.
Tell everybody about your yoga retreats.
Thank you. That's very kind. We are having a women's only yoga retreat in Idlewild, California, that is in the mountains. Idlewild is in the beautiful mountains surrounded by pine trees, and the energy is sublime. And I've always wanted to do a women's only retreat. I love doing the co-eds as well, but there's something about when women get together and the energy of just women, to me, is really profound and incredibly nourishing and nurturing. So we're only having a very small group get together, and right now there's only two spaces that are still available. And we will be doing it. It will be 3 days, and we will also be doing the dance that I talked about, and doing yoga every day and eating vegetarian food. And there will be a hot tub that overlooks the ravine. And it's going to be really something.
Sounds really great. And I will have your website up on my blog, so everybody can sign, if there's still spaces left, can sign up for it.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And also, I know you have a CD. It has an amazing cover that's so beautiful. Why don't you tell about that, too?
The CD was actually my partner's idea. And when I came back from India, we made it. And in fact, my best friend from high school who helped me with it is on my couch in the other room as we're speaking right now. So, and her dear friend took pictures. So it's like a group effort, this particular
CD. It's a beautiful picture, too. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, Keith did an amazing job with the pictures. He really did. It was fun. The CD is sort of a CD to start people to meditate, the beginning of meditating. And I didn't want to write meditating because sometimes that's just sort of a turnoff to some people because it seems too spiritual or religious or too foreign. when really meditating is having awareness of your thoughts and your mind, being able to slow down to see what your mind is thinking and to be able to choose what you want to follow. Because a lot of times when we think, we just naturally think whatever we're thinking is correct. But if you start meditating and you go deeper and deeper, you'll be able to choose what you want to hold on to. So this particular meditation has chanting in it. It has a full body relaxation where I take you through all parts of the body so you can start unwinding and relaxing to it. It does also have, and that's the nighttime relaxation, it also has a morning meditation as well to invigorate and to wake people up. Affirmations, I believe, at the very end. And, yeah, I like it. I mean, it's my first one I ever made. I'm excited to do more, but it's sweet. It has a sweet, there's a lot of love in it.
And is it on your website? Is that, or do you buy it Amazon?
Is.
Where do you get it?
You can get it. You can look at my website, which is hudsonlike.com. And there's all the information for the yoga retreat and for the CD. And we're also planning on having another yoga retreat that's co-ed in September or October. And we're getting that together as well. And that will be a bigger group. And that will be also quite delicious and healing and loving as well, and usually really fun.
Will that be here in California too?
That will be in California. It will be on the West Coast. I mean, a lot of times we like to do things either in the middle or east or west.
Okay.
Someplace it's easy for everybody to get to.
And this is a question of my own curiosity. How do you balance between your personal life and, you know, your work, your yoga retreats and your CD and your what you're doing? How do you balance between that? That's one of my difficulties, so I always ask that question.
How do you balance it? Can you be more specific?
Sure. How do you make sure that everybody in your life has some time with you when you're so busy doing other things?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I haven't always been really good at that, for sure. When I was younger and I was living in New York City, I would come home to rot home. I would come visit my parents in Rochester, New York, and I would tend to overbook myself with all my friends. And I have a habit of overloading myself that way and saying yes a lot. So I think it's, as I get older, it's easier to say no, and it's easier to check in with myself first before I respond to a need or a want of someone else, and to see if that's possible, to see if I can, if I have enough energy and want to even do it. And that way I'm honoring myself and I'm honoring the other person, because then, you know, there's nothing worse than when you have, like, a bunch of stuff to do on the computer and you're talking to your friend and you can barely hear them because you're too busy working.
Yeah.
So it's really about separation and being able to know what you can do in that moment and how to take care of yourself, even to the point of, like, knowing when I need a nap. I used to never let myself nap. And I'm not great at it all the time, but now I'll be like, I actually need a nap. And I'll set a timer and give myself 20 minutes.
Yeah,
it's amazing. It's self-responsibility.
It's something that I learned too. My dad was great at that. He would say, okay, I'm taking a nap. Bye. But it's hard to do that, break up your day. But it is a necessary thing.
Well, the trick to the napping, from what I've learned, is, like, don't do more than 20 minutes. Do 10 to 20 minutes. Because once you start going deeper, you're going to get really groggy, and then it's going to feel not so good to me. But the 20 minutes is perfect, and I feel refreshed.
I think that's great. I think that plus meditation in the morning, that really, I only meditate once a day. I mean, it's hard for me to meditate, so I only do it once a day.
That's great.
But, so I usually meditate in the morning, and then I take a nap in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's good self-care.
I try. I do. We have two callers, so I thought, let me see. Thank you for calling. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Madison. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
And my name is Hudson.
Hi. I'm sorry?
What's your question for Hudson?
Okay, yeah, my question. You're a very spiritual person, but it's also part of your business since you're a co-owner of your yoga center. How do you maintain the balance between work and spirituality when both intertwine? Like, I'm a pharmacist, but I'm also a Christian. But, I mean, Christianity doesn't take part of what I do. I'm a pharmacist of science. That's what I mean.
I missed what you said you did. I heard you said you were a Christian, but what is it that you do?
I'm a pharmacist.
A pharmacist, okay.
Yes.
And can you just say your question one more time?
Sure, of course. You're a very spiritual person, but it's also part of your business. You're a co-owner of your yoga center. So it's like your spirituality intertwined with your work. It's part of, like, your career. So how do you maintain that balance between, like, how do you separate it, or is it, like, really combined together?
It's a great question. Thank you so much for asking it, Madison. What I'm trying to learn is that not to separate it ever. Like, my spirituality is just a part of me. That's not always the truth. Sometimes I'll sit in the morning and do all my spiritual work and get on the road and get road rage. That's not how I want to live, but that's what happens sometimes. And even that road rage, actually, for lack of a better word, can be a doorway to my learning. So my spirituality doesn't even have to be spiritual. I don't have to even use the word spirituality. I can use learning, because I love to learn. And so if I have the same habits over and over again, and there's places I do, those can be doorways for me to learn more about myself and to figure out what am I not getting in that moment, to start asking questions. Why do I react this way? If I can slow down enough. Because sometimes the reaction is so strong and the habit is so strong to react that strong, it takes patience and time to reroute my brain to actually ask the question, to slow down and ask the question. So for me, it's all about expanding. Like, I want to have a really full, big life. And that doesn't mean I want to be like some guru to a bunch of people, or I want to be a movie star. I just want to have a really full, beautiful, loving, imperfect, perfect life. So, yeah, I would say that they're combined. They really can't be separate, except I can't literally chant while I'm doing it. Radio interview. I can't do.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, caller.
Thank you for having me.
Did that answer your question, Madison?
Oh, I put her on hold. Hold on, bring her back. Madison, Hudson wants to know if that answered your question.
Yeah. I wanted to know, did you separate the two? Were they separate? Okay, this is me personally being spiritual, and this is just my job. Like, some yoga teachers they go in, they teach you, and then, you know, they separate. And when they're at home, they're like Buddhist, and they chant, and they sometimes just separate the two. They separate themselves from it. And since it's not my career, you know, it's not something that I do at work, I wanted, do you separate it, or is it always with you? But it seems that it's always with you.
Yeah, I would imagine you're a Christian, so that's your love. That's your beloved, would be Christ. So if I was Christian, what I would do, and if I was a pharmacist, which I'm not either, but I would study the teachings of Christ. They're so beautiful, and then I would do the best I can to live them while I'm doing my work. I mean, isn't that the point? It's not about, like, being at home and just reading it by yourself in bed. That's the easy part. The hard part is, like, practicing from our teachers and being able to make mistakes and forgive ourselves and not beat ourselves up, but, like, to take that into the world.
Did that help, Madison?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. I'm going to put you on hold so I can get the next caller, okay?
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Thank you for calling. May I have your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, I assume I am the next on queue. It's hard to tell. This is Richard, and I'm calling from Manhattan, New York.
Okay, and ask
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Hudson.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. I have a comment about naps. I can fall asleep at any time of the day, and the way I take a nap is more like a meditative exhale. And when I feel refreshed, it's more like a meditative inhale. So it's more like going in and out of meditation rather than doing my best to fall asleep. It's being aware of my entire surroundings, but choosing then to come back at some point when I feel refreshed. And I was wondering if in any way that is how you take a nap.
No, but it sounds delightful. That sounds really nice. When
yeah,
I take a nap,
do the same thing.
Oh, did he teach you that?
No, but we've never used an alarm clock. My father died at 92, and his entire family dies in their sleep with a smile on their face. So it's nice.
Yeah, I understand not using an alarm clock for when I'm sleeping. I can wake up when I go to bed. I don't need an alarm clock. But for naps, I need it because I tend to like to sleep past the 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was why I wanted to ask. Okay, thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Richard. Thanks for checking in.
Okay, sure.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay.
I'm going to put you back on hold so you can hear the rest.
Yes.
Hold on.
Sure.
Thank you for calling. May I have your name and where you're calling from?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You're
I'm
on the air.
I'm calling from Australia. Oh, I'm calling from Australia. And my name is Marina.
Hi, Maria.
So I think. Hi. So we might have a little bit of feedback. My question is, I only got to see the whole of Xena Warrior Princess for the first time in 2011 as an uninterrupted beginning-to-end program. And I have studied consciousness for a number of years, and I was astounded at how much consciousness or universal truth was embedded and tucked away in an episode after episode. So my question to you is, while you were part of that group of people, and I also find it very interesting to see where many of you have actually gone on from there in your exploration of who we are and what we're doing here. But I'll go back to my question, and that is, while you were part of that amazing group of people, how aware were you of the universal truth that you were actually portraying through that television series?
That's such a great question. Thank you for asking it. R.J. Stewart was the head writer. And he, to me, is a genius. So was I aware of the universal truths? Yes. Did I get all of them? Probably not. And I didn't watch the whole show, so I don't know that much about. I only know what I did in Xena. I think the thing that I loved the best about that show was how deep it ran, even though it was shot like a comic book series. But I loved that show because of the profound messages that it would put out there in so many different ways. I mean, not just profound in spirituality, but also sexuality. I mean, so many different ways. So did I know. Probably not to the extent that, probably even now not to the extent that of what RJ meant to do. But, yes, I feel really blessed to be a part of that particular show in so many ways that you cannot even imagine that are even deeply personal to me of where I was before I got that job and how that job changed me personally as well.
Yeah. And I'm left wondering if, because I find the universal appeal for it even now astounding, and I'm sure you're well aware of the people that are desiring a movie. And I question whether that desire comes from an unconscious longing for more as opposed to the surface thing of the action figure and, you know, the strength of women in it, which was all true. But for something to have lasted as long as this has, I'm wondering if that is the true desire of what's actually fueling a round-the-world calling for more. And I'm not... Do you see, in terms of where you are with your spirituality now, do you see any of the entertainment industry offering anything of that caliber?
I don't. I'm not much of a TV person. Right now I'm totally addicted to Breaking Bad, which is a fantastic show. Fantastic
show. That hasn't arrived in Australia.
Oh, just wait. Although it's, anything can be spiritual, but it's Breaking Bad is it's very, very dark, but it's incredibly well done and very, very human, and you don't get that a lot in TV. And the acting is fantastic. But as far as that question, I can't answer that, quite honestly, because I don't watch enough TV to be able to answer that. And the movies that...
Well, I was thinking more of film, Hudson. You know, I recall one of our Australian Idol judges saying to a performer, the goal of art is to inspire, to help lift, to raise. I look at the, you know, here's my judgment. I look at the plethora of, you know, big screen cinema that's coming out today. And most certainly there's an entertainment value. But, you know, how much of what is really coming out today is actually inspiring and uplifting? And I'm sure in your, you know, for example, in your exploration, you know, you create more of what you focus on. And, you know, that's a universal truth. And so, you know, we're focusing on zombies and we're focusing on, you know, apocalyptic catastrophes. And, you know, we're directing people's minds there and their images there. And you put enough attention there and you'll eventually, you know, prove yourself to be right, manifest your reality. And
right.
So, you
I
know,
agree with that.
So, yeah, so, you know, I'm preaching here.
I love it. Totally. I really love it. But I can tell you what my take on that is. Would you like to know?
Go ahead. I'm open to it. Are you?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, everybody's different. Everybody's different. And this is just a thought. This is by no means the truth. But this realm that we're in, the human realm, I don't know if we'll ever have... Who knows if we're ever going to have, like, complete peace on Earth. It feels like this place is a place to really experiment and explore every aspect of what we are. It's pretty messy. It's a messy playground. That doesn't mean we have to stay in the dirt and stay dark, but there is shadow. There's definitely shadow within being human. And it's funny that you mentioned the zombie movie because I watched that. Like, I begged my partner to take me to that movie. I did. I was like, I want to see that movie. I want to see that movie. I went to the movie. I was so disturbed. I wouldn't look at the screen a lot. That's how scared I was. And when we went to dinner afterwards, my shoulders were up by my ears, and I could not relax. But at the same time, and although I'm not sure I want to put myself through that adrenaline junkie feeling again, I do find that there's healing and there's things to see in everything. And that shadow side, to me, this is going to sound pretty bizarre, but not if you take it into consideration. I played a character like Cleisto. I find that the shadow side has a lot to offer, a lot to offer. Not that I want to create zombies in the world, although I think sometimes we already are a little bit of zombies at times. Me too. But that darkness where we're disconnected and we're hungry and it's me first is alive and well in me and certainly on the road when you drive. So there's things to learn from everything. But you don't have to watch it. Yeah. That's for sure. You don't have to watch it. But
I don't.
And I get we need the contrast in order to find out what we like and what we don't like. You know, and so I hear you very clearly in what you're expressing there because, you know, that's one way we move ourselves forward. But the question is, you know, I remember my teacher asking me many years ago, how many more rooms do you want to build onto the house you have now and when are you going to start living in the ones you already have?
Beautiful. Well, that is beautiful. Yeah. I think, and everybody's different. I don't have an answer of why the zombie movie was so attractive to me. Like, I really don't. It's just an instinct. I don't normally like horror movies. I certainly do not want to watch The Exorcist with people or by myself. There's things I just don't want to be around. But sometimes, for whatever reason, there's something that attracts me, and I don't ask, and I go, and for good or bad.
Yeah.
But the thing that me personally that triggers me that feels like worthless is not the right word. It feels like it's not putting into something into the world. I felt when I personally, and I'll just speak of myself so I don't put it on other TV shows, when I worked for Melrose Place or University Hospital, I felt like I was putting junk into the world. I don't feel that about the zombie movie. For whatever reason, I don't feel that. But I do feel like when I did shows that had no message or, like you said, inspiration. See, I find inspiration in that particular zombie movie. I don't know why, and I can't articulate it really well, but I do in that darkness.
Yeah.
But in that particular
I think that's
show,
why it's being made for you, for people who find something inspirational.
Right,
you
and there's maybe people who really watched those TV shows that Aaron Spelling did and was like, I love this show. Like, it brings me so much joy for whatever reason. That was not my experience. So that would be more, the way you're talking about the zombie movies is probably how I feel more about something that I would call really fluffy and just gossipy.
Yeah, and I think, look, if I can sort of think of, because I don't want to give you or anyone listening the impression of anything dark is bad, you know, that just takes us down the judgment path. But, you know, if we go back to XWP, and if you recall that episode where Xena's fighting the Horde, and she issues a whole heap of instructions to Gabrielle. And Gabrielle, it doesn't fit for her. It doesn't feel good for her. And she makes a decision to do what feels right for her, and that is to give the dying people water. And in that moment, Xena sees that Gabrielle has made a choice that has then made a difference for others. But it's not the action she took, it's that she listened to herself. Now, if we look at that episode of people dressed up, you know, painted and killing one another, that's pretty dark, you know. But it had an amazing message. So that was inspirational, even though it wasn't light, love, and fluffy.
That's why I felt proud of Xena.
Me too.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to put you on hold so we can we have one more caller. I really appreciate your call, but we have one more caller that I want to get their question, okay?
And thank you so much, and all
thank
the
you.
Very,
lovely.
Very best to you, Hudson.
Thank you, love. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
Hold on, and
pleasure.
I'll put you on hold so you can listen to the rest of the show. Okay. Thank you for calling. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from. Caller, are you there? Okay. Caller, are you there?
Yes, hi. My name is Craig, and I'm calling from Trinidad and Tobago. Hudson, my question for you is, what was it like working with Lucy Lawless and that entire cast and at Xena and at Hercules, The Legendary Journeys? Was it something that you enjoyed doing? Did you think it was something that motivated other people? Was it a role you were looking for at that point in time?
Well, first, hello. Thank you for your questions. And it's a lot of questions.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I'll see if I can ramble about them. How did I like working on Xena? Xena and Hercules, the sets were very, very different. Xena was very feminine set, and Hercules was very masculine. So I felt actually more comfortable working on the Xena set, and I was there longer. And it was work. It was just work, really. There's not much I can talk about. The setting was stunning. I remember walking outside my trailer and being like, I cannot believe that I get to work, like, and go outside in this beautiful, incredible land, and that's my day. So it felt like a huge blessing. It wasn't something I was necessarily looking for. I didn't ever think about playing a dark character necessarily like that. I thought more of playing like strippers and drug addicts. That was back then, especially, it was something that I was really interested in doing. I'm more definitely drawn towards the darker side, because I also think there's great light in the dark. And after you go to hell, personally, like if you've been through a very hard part in your life and you get through it, you have a lot more compassion for other people that are in the same place. So I like that. I find the people that I admire the most are the people that have been into the darkest places themselves. Those are the people that are my heroes, that have gotten out and help other people. But to go back to Xena, it was a fantastic job. It was an amazing part. I've never had a part that I felt more comfortable playing and more joy playing, strangely. There was so much joy in playing that character for me.
Well, I definitely enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you did. Yeah, so did I. But you know what I have to say? Like, being an actress, sometimes you just forget you're going to work every day. So that was just a job. I just went to work, said the lines, took the physical actions that I had to take. And then you don't think anything about it. You think, really, you don't think people are going to see it. You forget that it's going to go on air. You forget when the episode comes out and people are like, oh, my God, this episode. And you're like, oh, my God, I sort of remember that. It's just a job and you're done with it. It's over. But I do remember the first Xena I ever did. I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, my mom's like, how was your job? And I remember thinking, Mom, I think I said this to her. I go, Mom, it's the worst work I've ever done. It's so bad. And it's so over the top, and I'm really embarrassed, but I don't think anyone's going to watch it anyway, so it'll be fine. So that was my thought.
I have one more quick question for you.
Sure.
You spoke earlier about getting in that 20-minute nap. What about us? There's some of us who can't fall asleep in 20 minutes. Any tips for me on that one?
That you can't fall asleep?
Yeah, it takes me more than 20 minutes to fall asleep.
Oh, I can tell you suggestions. I don't know if they'll work for you, but exercise really helps. If you exercise where you sweat and you do it for over 20 minutes, 25 minutes to 30 minutes, you'll have a better time, an easier time sleeping and calming the mind down. Meditation can also help. Like if you start a meditation, in my CD, I'm sure other people's CDs have something like this too. There's the sleeping time one takes you through each part of your body where you visualize relaxing each part of your body, which can help. Also, another trick, which is going to sound so counterintuitive, is putting your feet under really, really cold water. It'll wake you up in the moment that you first do it, but it's helpful for sleeping.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah. Good
luck.
Thank you very much.
We've come to the end. Thank you so much, Hudson. I really, really appreciate your taking the time and joining us.
Oh, thank you, Sherry. It was fun. I liked it.
I really, really appreciate it. All right. Next week, I am going to be having Doug Smith. He's going to be on to talk about his book, Same, Same. And I would like my live audience to thank Hudson for a great interview, and I want to thank you, too. Thank you very much, Hudson. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.